Yet another week, yet another episode of Pitch Invasion, episode number 6, where we'll be focusing plenty on the international side of things. Hello and welcome. My name is Lwazi Zikubu.
I'm Xolo Makwaza.
I'm Emeka Enyadike.
And we are talking AFCON 2019 first up. We saw some plenty of football and some rather surprising results as well, as far as perhaps the big guns or so-called big guns of African football is concerned. And we'll start with South Africa and a rather surprise draw. Surprise in the sense that a lot of people expected this to be a win for South Africa, but maybe not so much of a surprise if you look at the recent results South Africa have failed to come up with when playing at home in AFCON qualifiers.
I'm one of those people who also expected a win. I mean, I thought Bafana this time, having beaten Nigeria away from home, that's the momentum you carry into this game.
That was about a year ago.
It doesn't matter, Mika. Even if it was 6 years ago, if we beat Nigeria away from home, that doesn't happen all the time. So
imagine if you
beat Nigeria away from home, you celebrate that until the cows come home.
Imagine if you, exactly. if you failed to qualify for AFCON after that week.
That's a story for another day, And I thought, coming into this game, that's the sort of approach Stuart Baxter would have used in terms of saying to the guys, let's come with our chest up.
Yeah.
We beat Nigeria away from home. We've got 3 points. I know we can't underestimate Libya, but guys, we're actually good enough this year. Mm. We've got players playing in higher leagues than, the last time we played Nigeria. And, our players were actually informed domestically. So you would have assumed that, a comfortable 2-3-0 was on the cards. And I felt that they gave us a scare, to be quite honest with you. Kune had to be on point at some points of the game.
Yeah.
He had to make some good saves. And we just never really looked threatening. Even going forward, we went sideways. We didn't really penetrate. We didn't create enough goal-scoring opportunities. And in AFCON qualifying, in fact, in qualifying in Africa in general, whether it's the World Cup, whether it's AFCON, if you do not score goals and create goal-scoring opportunities,
especially at home,
you will be frustrated by those teams that come here to get
my friend, Baxter said, in the second half, we were not true to ourselves. I tell you, Bafana were true to themselves. We were not.
So, not creating chances is Bafana being true to themselves. Oh my goodness!
And they were not scoring goals. So
this is an issue. This is a big issue because I think part of the backlash after this result was, not scoring enough goals, not creating enough chances, a missed opportunity at home. Bradley Khrobla, who's arguably the informed striker in the country at the moment, started on the bench.
Not Kabuz.
Started on the bench. I want to ask, before we continue, as South Africa, from what you've seen, Emeka, are we a false nine playing nation? Do we play false nine because we don't have enough strikers, or do we play false nine because it's the best sort of possible formation for us to play with the players that we have?
I asked the question on the last show, is Gabuza a striker?
That's not even talk about.
I mean, the point I'm making is do you have a striker for Bafana who has the goal-scoring record of a striker? Mm. So you don't.
But then...
You don't have... There's no striker in Bafana that does 20 goals a season.
You know what, Lwazi? Can I interrupt you there, Lwazi?
Could Bradley Khrobla have done anything more to earn a start?
Can I say something, right? As much as I want to disagree with Amika, he's actually right. Because even when you look back in Bafana's DNA, from 96, Masinga, Bari, Sean Bartlett overseas, McCarthy, Ajax, and so forth, all our strikers of yesteryear that we've taken either to the World Cups, won AFCON and done well, were playing overseas and banging goals
and
overseas.
Doing very well.
And I must be honest to you, it's been a while. I know, Tuke Laurenti still, if he does come back into the fold at some point as one of those guys.
Hopefully he does.
But he's back home now. But the point that I'm trying to make is that it seems like there's a trend that we've missed over the years in terms of what we need up front as a striker. Somebody who, even in Europe, is respected. I mean, you remember Sean Bartlett. The guy was playing at Charlton in the Premier League. The guy, I remember as young as I was watching Sean Bartlett banging goals. He even had a goal of the month at some point in the Premier League. So I'm talking about that sort of caliber of striker. And, to echo Amika's sentiment, we just don't have that guy up front. We don't have that guy up front that brings sort of fear to defenders. We have guys that are pacey, guys that are skillful. But in terms of the sort of lethal approach that is needed up front. We just don't have that. And I don't know. I don't know what's going to... Maybe the coaching might have to change formation-wise, like you suggested, yeah. a false nine playing nation. But at the end of the day, a striker needs to be a striker and score goals. And okay. we don't have that.
Okay. We're not scoring. We don't have a striker that scores goals. We are not scoring goals at home. And this is a big issue. You only have a handful of games to qualify.
We need to play Nigeria more often, if that's the case.
Well, away from home, I think you've managed to score 4 goals against Nigeria, yeah. so it's not bad. But the last time you played Nigeria in Cape Town, it was 0-0.
There's so many 0-0s.
The worry for me is... Bafana played... I mean, make no mistake about it. They played very well. I mean, they moved the ball around. They passed the ball.
This is against Libya.
In this game, yes. Yeah. But, you know, something is just fundamentally wrong with the mentality of the players. When you get close to the goal area, that's why I like Lompo Kekana. Somebody has to decide at some point in time that, look, these guys are not, you know, they're putting so many bodies behind the ball. Take a shot. You know, if you pull the stats from the game, very, very few shots on target. And if you don't take shots on target, obviously you're not going to get goals. So that's where my worry is with the team.
Before we sort of focus on Libya a bit more, were Tlhompho Kekana, Bongani Zungu and Themba Zwane missed over the weekend? Did we miss those three?
Yes, I think particularly Tlhompho, because one thing he does is you never know where he's going to shoot from.
Yeah.
And that gives you... I mean, the point is, if he takes a shot, there's a ricochet and maybe somebody slams it in.
Yeah.
But Keegan Dolly, I don't know if I was really impressed with him on that day. But I think that there has to be something done about the player's attitude towards, you know, shooting that goal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, look, yes, we are sort of... In a position where there's a big debate within South African football. Was it a good point? Was it 2 points dropped? But for Libya, are we you know, underestimating them? For them, it was a... I mean, you saw the way they celebrated at the end of the game. For them, it was a big point.
Listen, I said before we got on air that, you know, one of the things that did disappoint me coming from, you know, the tabloids and stuff was, you know, them lamenting Libya for actually coming here for a point. And I beg to differ. There were chances that Libya had where they could have scored. And I think once they felt that, listen, we did give it a go.
Yeah.
We nearly scored. At this point, you might as well shut up shop. We've also got 3 points.
Yeah.
We might as well salvage a draw and, you know, go away from here leaving with something as opposed to trying and going all out offense and leaving with nothing. And, you know, they did themselves justice. I mean, Kune was called upon more than once to keep us in the game. So I don't think Libya actually came here for a draw, because even at halftime, we could have been 2-0 down easily.
Yeah.
Easily. And I think there was a point where they did hit the post or nearly did score somewhere at the end of the first half. So I think Libya, to me, were the winners in this game, despite both teams going home.
Yeah, psychologically, I think they will gain a lot of confidence, having gotten a draw. And remember, they're on top of the table, so
yes,
yeah. So I mean, added to that,
they're not playing in a domestic league currently because of their situation, the civil war in their country.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to add that to the mix, I don't know how you should feel if you're a Bafana supporter, knowing that you played against a team where guys were literally picked
respect is the order of the day. You just have to respect every team.
Oh, we're back to respect Mourinho tendencies now.
Yes,
we're back to respect now.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe it informs, you know, a lot of the so-called, and I'm reluctant to call Bafana a so-called big side, because I think we're way past that. But it maybe does inform.
Fallen giant.
Perhaps that's the best,
we'll
best
get
way
up.
To put it. Okay. We'll come back.
They fell down a lot. Huh?
Do you
remember that they won in 96?
Can't forget.
In 98, they got silver.
And then third in 2000.
Third. Mm. And then suddenly they dropped out of AFCON and had to only qualify when they hosted.
No, but I mean, still in that period, we still qualified for the 2002 World Cup. So it wasn't
2002 wasn't still too far from 98.
Yeah. But my point was, if you look at some of the results from the qualifiers and how a lot of the big boys really struggled, perhaps it's just another sign, or perhaps another just a bit of a message to these big boys. I mean, the likes of Senegal drew against Madagascar, a very surprising result, even though Senegal were playing away from home. Cameroon were held, Algeria were held, Ghana lost to Kenya, DR Congo were held.
I hear there's a public holiday in Kenya.
And they were playing with 10 men in Kenya for a large part of the second half. They had 10 guys. They got a red card. Yeah. So
Chipolopolo were held by Namibia as well.
That was a very good game. Mm. Namibia versus Zambia was a very competitive game.
Yeah.
Well, a great atmosphere as well. A lot of... so it wasn't... I mean, they were not, even Nigeria, when they won against Seychelles, you could see that one. They played against a very, very terrible pitch. Yeah. And Seychelles were not pushovers. They defended very stoutly. And maybe they probably didn't stand a chance to win the game. But you just have to understand that there are no teams in Africa that you can call minnows anymore.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true. And that takes me back to a couple of years ago when we played Cape Verde. And I don't know if it was you, Ola, making this point that they had... More players playing
internationally than we did.
Exactly.
I still remember I was in Durban at the convention center when President Zuma pulled Cape Verde out of the
upside down Cape Verde.
Even he was laughing. He was like, you know, he was laughing, and then everyone in the hall was going all like, no, Bafana's going like, you know, what have you got? Before that game, they played a friendly game against Nigeria, and it ended 0-0. And I thought to myself, like, no, these boys are gonna cause some trouble.
They gave us a
and they beat Cameroon. Yeah. People forget they beat Cameroon to qualify for that AFCON.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Emeka says, definitely no longer any small teams and small games that you can take for granted, especially when it comes to AFCON qualifying. And you've looked at South Africa's situation, still second in their group, tied on points with Libya, but still some really big games to come, including traveling away to Libya and welcoming Nigeria to South Africa. I feel that's going to be a really big game as far as Bafana are concerned. Well, that says 4-0 to South Africa.
4-0.
I will,
does not agree.
The good thing is, you know, we will come back and... and have a conversation after the game. So, still a long way to go.
Notice he's not as confident with Nigeria as he is with Liverpool.
With everyone else,
it was Liverpool. Like, no, it would be easy with Nigeria. He knows.
No.
You can't be that confident.
When it comes to Nigeria, South Africa, I'm very confident. That game in Uyo that you won, don't let it get into your head, because this team that's going to come here, they will come here with vengeance. Just watch out.
Two goals and a clean sheet was the result there for South Africa. So do excuse us, we're a bit confident. But let's move on now to what happened over in Europe. And the confusion that still surrounds the UEFA Nations League really didn't, you know, sort of stop over the weekend. I managed to catch one or two games, and I was just like, you know, this feels very much like a waste of time. I cannot tell you
how many messages I got from people asking me to explain what's going on in this UEFA Nations League. And I must be honest to you, this is the diet of Diet Cokes of international friendlies, to be honest to you.
It's terrible.
Look, I understand. For me, the UEFA Nations League is all about money and UEFA trying to, you know, stick it to FIFA in some way or another. I don't see the significant value in it. That's why we have the FIFA ranking systems to determine who is above who. So if Germany are the number one team, they are the number one team in the world, which means they're the number one team in Europe.
Yeah.
That's as simple as that. What the UEFA Nations League is going to prove, I've got no idea. Because, I mean, I saw there were, you know, games like Albania playing, you know, and Lithuania. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, why not spread the game of football? If Albania need a friendly, can Bafana not play Albania, right?
No, man.
Can Lithuania... No. I'm serious, Amika. Can we not have those sort of teams maybe come here? Maybe... I know there's AFCON qualifying right now, but, you know, I would like to have seen a friendly where some of the African teams play those, dare I say, fringe European nations. Maybe like a DR Congo, who are on the rise and have really good players playing abroad. Let's see them maybe play Switzerland, right? There's a huge DRC base in Switzerland, right? Let's see them play there. Let's see, you know, like I said, teams like Lithuania, why don't they play Namibia? Why don't all these other teams that were playing games that I felt that were quite meaningless? We've just had the World Cup. The Euro qualifiers are still coming. Yeah. The Euros are still some time away. I just don't see, you know, the relevance.
And I mean, a number of teams actually were bringing that point up.
But I can tell you, I watched a very brilliant game between France and the Netherlands.
That's top tier stuff.
I mean, typically you would expect that, you know, if it was a friendly game, you won't see the kind of crunchy tackles that we saw. I mean, Giroud scored a fantastic goal. It was a volley, and then you had Mbappe tearing through them, and then there was this massive point where Mbappe went through and Van Dijk pulled off a great stop.
Yeah.
And then you had.
Of course, you'll remember Van Dijk's stop.
Come on, look, if you see, I mean, that game was everything that you find in. Maybe even a World Cup game, was that competitive?
I can compare that to the Germany-France game that we saw towards the end of last week as well. And the England-Spain, I thought, was really entertaining.
England-Spain was good.
I remember also, there were no silly substitutions that you usually find in friendly games. So the teams took it seriously. And the advantage is some of those smaller teams have a route to the Euros if they do well in this tournament. So look at it from point of view of if you were European. What value does it bring to you? Yeah. And not sitting here in Africa and assuming that, you know,
they must be favors. Right? I hear what you're saying, right? I hear what you're saying. But my point with why I'm very much against this tournament is one of the reasons that I feel that the smaller European teams would benefit if they played maybe other stronger teams from other continents, because they are still going to be playing the same minnows that they're up against. So, you know, Albania is still going to be playing Lithuania, Slovenia is still going to be playing,
Uzbekistan.
That's why it's a league. There's promotion. If you do well, but you get promoted to that
Mika,
point.
Essentially, it's still going to boil down to the same thing. There's no way Albania are going to get to that top tier of the UEFA Nations.
We saw Wales and Iceland. We saw Wales and Iceland at the Euros.
But okay, Wales and Iceland, look, as well as they did perform at the Euros, they're still a second-tier European football
league. Agree.
I'll give you a scenario, right? Would you not like to see Wales play Nigeria, for instance?
I would love to see African teams play against European teams. But UEFA is the European Football Association, not the European African Football Association. Their first interest is two things. One, what is the best interest for the European teams? What is the best interest for how can they make more money? Your question should be geared towards CAF. Now that UEFA has come up with this UEFA Nations League, what is the plan for CAF?
But we know, Amika, CAF, you know, this is where I must say, I mean, CAF, we know our players, you know, who play abroad, right? Anytime CAF try bring in something, like you've seen, we've had to change the World Cup, right? AFCON, right? It was in February, okay? We have a lot of star players playing for the top teams. It hurts them. They've said it on numerous occasions.
But that's the thing.
It hurts their places.
This window that we have now, right? where they have the UEFA Nations League, we have AFCON every 2 years.
Yeah.
UEFA has their European Championship once every 4 years. That gives them room to experiment like they've done now. What have we done in Africa? We created CHAN, a very strange tournament where it is an international tournament of players who are based in Africa. Just some very unconvincing argument about why we had to have CHAN. So, you know, we have made our choice and we have to live with it, because it's like saying, oh, why does UEFA have the UEFA Champions League? It's all about two things: what is in their interest, what's in their money. And you know why? Because the clubs, the big clubs in Europe at one time threatened to pull out and form their own league.
Yeah.
And they do have
it
in basketball. They have it in basketball and they want to do the same thing for football. But UEFA was smart enough to say, okay, look, guys, come in, let's have a conversation. We structured it this way and you get more of the money than we do. Okay. And it works for everybody.
Okay, so in the bigger scheme of things, where does the Nations League sort of rank? Where does it fit in? If you are FIFA, for example, you FIFA first and foremost, and then you UEFA, in the bigger scheme, where does this all fit in? Because you look at a situation like Luke Shaw, for example, fantastic start to the season, gets injured, it looked bad. Fortunately, I think it's just a concussion, so he will take some time, but he will come back. But had that been even worse, from a Manchester United point of view, you're thinking this United Nations League or this UEFA Nations League has just cost me.
Well, I agree, but the point is that.
So what's the value? It's value
with UEFA. They're going to have a plan. To compensate the clubs, and
in that situation,
yes. If you bring in FIFA themselves are currently in negotiation with a company that's offered them $25 billion to scrap the UEFA, the FIFA club championship and the FIFA Confederations Cup. And Infantino signed a non-disclosure agreement to not disclose the name of the company, but an offer is on the table, which has been tabled before UEFA. UEFA are unhappy because this means a direct challenge, because whatever happens with that FIFA club championship will be hinged on European nations and European clubs. If European clubs don't play in the FIFA club, new plan FIFA club league, then there's no value. So they are saying that, you know, this is almost like you're trying to, what's the word now? You know, go around them and take money out of them. So we were in a very, very dicey situation.
You see, for me, I think, look, let's be honest with ourselves now. Change always happens, right? There will be change down the road in terms of the structures, even from the league, domestic leagues, cup competitions, Champions League. You saw now in the Euros where a team that finished third can still make it through to
and go on and win it.
So change is going to happen.
Liverpool came forth and they go to the finals.
Okay, change. That hasn't changed. But change is going to happen, right? My only problem is that, you know, of all the sports that I look at in the world, when it comes to change, football is the one that its DNA is embedded in the structures that were made from the time it was formed till where we stand today. Well, sports like cricket.
Time has gone.
Sports of cricket have changed over the years, right? From the whites to the colors, World Cup, T20, and so forth. Rugby. You know, rugby sevens has come into the fray, and now women are playing rugby, and so forth.
So why are you complaining? Why are you complaining about football?
But now, football is one of those sports where, if you look at it from time, right, since 19, whenever they decided to,
I can give you the dates. 1904,
right? Since 1904, okay, till where we are today, right? The same structures are still there. You still need to put the ball in the back of the net. There's 11 people on either side, goalkeeper, referee, linesman, and so forth, right? That has not changed the entertainment value for over 100 and something years. We still love football for what it is. In cricket, people were complaining that, you know, there's some people that felt Test cricket was too long.
Yep.
The ODIs came in. Some people felt, well, the ODIs aren't as exciting. T20s came in. So the entertainment value changed the product. And you have three sectors of cricket fans right now. You've got the Test cricket followers, the T20s, and the ODIs.
Yeah.
Football, we are universal, right? We are still the same fans 100 years ago who enjoyed 11 on 11, who enjoyed, you know, the Champions League since when it started, who enjoyed the FA Cup. My problem is that with all these changes, right, that are happening, comes problems. And the problems that come in is all the changes that I don't want to see in football. For example, like we said, when the three teams in Europe, the team that finishes third in their group, can go on and advance to the next round. That, to me, does not add value. Mm. It does not add entertainment. So now we look at the UEFA Nations League. I understand it's a UEFA thing now. They've changed the situation. But look at it this way. Maybe, like you said with Manchester United, maybe England would not be playing such a strong opponent in that game. And Luke Shaw probably wouldn't have started. Mm. He loses, you know, some time at Manchester United when he's on form. Maybe he would have been rested in that game because they probably would have played maybe Japan.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have gone so hard. You look at France, Netherlands. There were so many tackles there that could have risked people's seasons, right? Yeah. And they're playing each other in a game that means so much when already in the domestic leagues, there's a lot to play for.
Yeah.
So as much as I embrace change, but there's certain things that don't have to change. And that's my problem.
It's the first week of it. Let's give it time and see what happens over the next 2-3 months. One good thing I know about UEFA is that if it doesn't work, they're going to scrap it.
Yeah.
But for now, I just think that, you know, it's good for them to experiment. You know, they're doing something different. My question has always been, you know, CAF needs to also be a bit more dynamic and a bit more creative than this. I've been a critic of CHAN before, and I've also, when I went to Rwanda, I thought it was a different tournament. But looking at the way things are moving globally, and also with all the technology and everything, I think that we need to be up in our game, you know, to stay in touch with what the Europeans are doing, because they are the center of the game.
Maybe, you know, one of the many good things we can take away from this opening week of the UEFA Nations League is the good quality games we did actually get to see. There was a couple of really, really
some are more meaningful games than football.
So perhaps, as Emeka says, it might be something that a lot of the other federations from around the footballing world might want to look into as well and introduce into the system. But that is segment one, and we're going to take a
Short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about what happened with one former captain and his former star, this of Real Madrid, and the shade that was thrown the one direction to the other. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Pitch Invasion podcast, the podcast for football tribalists.
Welcome back to Pitch Invasion, and we're going to go straight into some words that came from the lips of Sergio Ramos during the week, and this is what he had to say about the whole FIFA the best lineup, those three names that are in the running for that award. He says, maybe other players have more marketing or bigger names. Luka Modric deserves to win the award. So these were the words of Sergio Ramos, captain at Real Madrid, and one would assume, Ola, that he's talking about a man he shared the dressing room with for about 9 years.
This to me sounds like, you know, when someone has got a friend and their friend leaves, you know, the friend's boyfriend or girlfriend leaves them for another person and they're so upset about it and now they feel like, no, you should have stayed with my friend or, you know, that guy or that girl is not as good as... That's what it sounds like to me. It just sounds like a jealous... you know, somebody who scorned in some way or another, because, you know, he hadn't said that about Ronaldo when Messi was winning it all along. Yeah. You know, now Ronaldo's moved on to Juventus. All of a sudden, Sergio Ramos is so vocal about this.
And talking
so,
about the marketing.
Exactly. So that's what it sounds like to me. A jealous ex-friend or ex-lover who's just seen somebody else move on and, you know, cannot handle it well. Because
does he have a point, though, Amiga?
I just think that Sergio Ramos is, you know, he's making a very ridiculous comment there. This was a guy who was his teammate for many years, and they all were very happy that he won those awards.
They're very happy with the marketing then.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, to come up with something this silly, you know. I mean, Sergio Ramos, after his actions in the finals of the UEFA Champions League against Mohamed Salah,
has lost too much.
Let me get this right. So after that incident, he's lost.
I'm saying that.
Did he have your respect before?
Listen,
after
Sergio.
All the nonsense he's been.
Listen, Sergio Ramos lives on the edge.
Yeah.
But I thought he took it a bit too far, mm-hmm. and also for him to you know come out so vocally against against Ronaldo for me just doesn't make sense. What? It doesn't have anything to do with that whole incident. I'm just taking you back to that incident to say. You know, ordinarily, he shouldn't even have a voice because, you know, he's one of those people that really put the game in disrepute.
And
I think that he just needs to get his act together.
Okay, let's look though at sort of the meat in the statement when he says Modric deserves to win the award. Has Luka Modric done enough to win both the UEFA Player of the Year and the FIFA Best Player? Has he actually done enough?
One thing I will say, right? He's standing up for his teammate.
Yeah.
Right? I would have assumed that Ronaldo was also his friend and probably would have stood up for his friend and his teammate. So to me, it seems like they're no longer friends, or maybe they're not as close as you know we thought they were. But, you know, I'm not going to say I disagree or I agree with him. I understand why he's saying that.
Yeah.
It's his teammate. And, you know, why wouldn't you stick up for your teammate? Why wouldn't you say your teammate deserves it?
Would you be shocked, though, or would you be surprised if Luka Modric was to walk away with the award?
I won't be surprised because he's already won the best player of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I thought in the World Cup he did a lot better than Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
But for the World Cup, if you ask me, I thought a couple of the French players deserve the shot at winning it. But then, you know, if you go back to the UEFA award, did Modric deserve to win it better than Ronaldo did? Ronaldo practically carried that team because there was a point where they were struggling. And then he suddenly hit this patch with goal scoring and even broke the record for goal scoring there. Mm. So, you know, if I place it on the balance, I will give this award to one of the French players rather than either of them. And not even Mohamed Salah, who's on that place, because Mohamed Salah did nothing in the World Cup. But, you know, the way it is right now, if Modric gets it, maybe for a change, it's not a bad idea. He's won the same title as Ronaldo won in the UEFA Champions League.
Yeah.
And then he's gone a step further in the World Cup. So. Yeah. Maybe not a bad idea to give it to Modric, but it's not in Sergio Ramos's place
to speak in the first place.
Yes, not.
Well, a lot of sentiment, I think, will be behind the award should it go to Modric, because if I were to put my head on the block, I would not pick Modric as one of the top three players in the world.
I'll put Messi there
over the last year, but it's, you know, it's fine. I guess we've already resigned ourselves to the fact that the 2018 award is going to go to
Modric. If it doesn't go to Luka Modric, I'd be very surprised. Speaking and sticking with shots being fired from one side to the other, here's an interesting statement coming from the life and times of Kaizer Chiefs. This is a statement from good old Bobby Motaung, in fact his father, Kaizer, and he says that the Chiefs coach, Giovanni Solinas, wasn't a first choice.
Well, why are we surprised? The guy arrived a week before the season started, so that should not surprise anybody. And look, one thing I've always respected about Kaizer Chiefs, of all the teams in this country, is that, you know, they brand themselves as always being, you know, doing the right thing. They sign the right players. They get into the right deals. They always make deals or moves that make sense for the club as a whole. So when they got Solinas in the week of the start of the season, that took me by surprise, because I was thinking, this is not the organized Chiefs that I know, you know, from all these years. And it doesn't surprise me now that I look at it when he's saying that it's not he wasn't the first choice. So maybe somebody was lined up and, you know, they phoned Solina late on Sunday night saying, hey, look, you know, just apply for your visa in case this guy doesn't make it. And you know what? I think Chiefs are also in a desperate situation right now, and still without a win in the league. And
what kind of a statement?
They might have to go back and go back to the drawing board and say, you know what, Solinas wasn't our first choice.
Yeah.
You know, was he our second? Was he our third choice? And maybe see whoever the first choice was. I don't know if he's at another club somewhere, but that hasn't stopped PSL teams from yanking coaches two games into the season and replacing them. So maybe they might have to see if they can get whoever their first choice is and replace Solinas, because I just don't think it's working with Solinas.
When
you appoint a coach 1 week to the league, and we've only seen like 4 weeks, and then we've seen the competition where you know they didn't do too badly overall. If you look at it, they lost in the semis. They won against Free State Stars, who thumped them out last season when they had what was probably a much better settled team. I think that it's too early for them to make this kind of statements. What they need to do is not go back to the drawing board. They need to support the coach and motivate the coach and the players and see if they can, you know,
Amika, support the coach. The guy just came out and said he's not the first choice.
That's what I'm saying.
Support the coach.
Okay, so there are two things. If he's not your first choice and you're not happy,
it's strange. Get
Dan Malisala, yank him two games.
That's what I'm saying. Get rid of him and get another coach. Otherwise, support the coach. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so this early into the season, as you put it, still 5 games played in the league, no wins, 4 draws and a defeat. And I just can't help but feel that Chiefs have already exhausted their draw quota for the season. You can't start
The other aspect is that, you know, they've lost one of their key players, their key leaders. Mm. You know, so I know they've added Manyama into the situation, but they've lost Shaba. Shaba's like the heart of Kaizer Chiefs. I know Kun is the soul, but Shaba surely is the heart of the team. And to lose him when the chips are down, you haven't won a game, you're out of the first big cup of the season.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they're in a... Hence, I say they might have to go back to the drawing board in terms of, okay, guys, let's restart our season. They might not have to fire the coach. Okay, fine.
They don't have to.
But I think they just need reset buttons. Okay, guys, international break, here's where we stand. We need to start with a new strategy, maybe a new lineup, maybe a new system.
They need one win from their next two games, and they probably could kick their season. I mean, they've only lost one game in the season. And it's not as if all the other teams, you know, are winning all their games. Yeah. So, you know, they're not too far off.
Okay, all right. So we'll touch a bit more on that with the ABSA Premiership returning over the weekend.
Makes us better? Rivalry. This is the ABSA Premiership.
I want to have a chat about, you know, this issue at Manchester United. We know Jose Mourinho comes with his own issues, but what I am seeing a lot of is United fans, especially on social media, and I had a real go at them this past week, a lot of them are pointing fingers at Paul Pogba. If it's not his hairstyle, it's his lack of commitment, maybe his words that he said last week, that who knows about his future. But a lot of them seem to have a thing with Paul Pogba, and I just don't get it.
To all our millions of listeners, I did say at the start of the season, do not take Pogba on fantasy because he's going to let you down. So, exactly where I stand on Pogba.
How has he let people down?
You know what my thing is with Pogba, Wazim? Okay? The price tag is what it is. He didn't set it.
Yeah.
However, you have to live it then. Right? You have to live it. If Beyonce to me came and said, listen, I want you to start dating me today, I have to live like I'm dating Beyonce. I cannot come up in flops and shorts and I need to come up looking like a superstar model.
She's not available.
I know she's not available, but I'm just saying, if Beyonce today were available and she picked me instead of you, I would have to play the part.
Please use another example.
I would have to play the part, right? I would have to play the part. Yeah. So the price tag on Pogba is what it is. It's said he has to play like an 80-90 million
player. He has to be Jay-Z to the Beyonce.
He has to play like that. And unfortunately, I know he hasn't had the easiest of starts going back from last season.
Yeah.
But this season, I would have thought, okay, he came back straight into the team. He's won the World Cup. Mm-hmm. They gave him the captaincy, scored a penalty. I thought that Pogba, okay, right now, he would have moved on and been up there amongst at least player of the month.
But Kola, he's not going to do it. Alone, if your team is set up negatively, there's nothing you can do.
And this is a very good point you make, Mika, because we all, and I speak as a United fan, we all know that the way that Mourinho sets United up, generally, is just absolutely.
I watched him, Pogba against the Netherlands, and he was having fun with it.
And it goes back to that. You talk about him coming back as a World Cup winner, and let's be honest, he's played 3 games this season for United. 2 of the 3 games, he's actually done a very good job.
Blasi, I read a quote from John Terry over the weekend, right? And it was directed at the Manchester United players. I'm not going to paraphrase it. Just the gist of what he said was, you know, the players have to see it through like I did. Because he said there was a point where Jose embarrassed him in training. And he made sure he worked so hard to improve Jose. And he said because of that work ethic that he did, it rubbed off against other players that, you know, felt that maybe Jose was not on their side. The rest is history with Jose and Chelsea.
So
all I'm saying is that, look, maybe Jose is just one of those people that, you know, you need to do something out of the norm to impress him. Samuel Eto'o went from striker to left wing, didn't like it, but he put on a shift for Jose, and again, the rest is history. So what I'm saying is that maybe, I know I'm always slamming Mourinho, but, you know, there are two sides to every story. So what I'm saying is, look at Luke Shaw, for example. This year, he's grinding, he's playing well, he's in the team, Jose seems impressed. So what I'm saying with Paul Pogba is maybe, right, let's just try impress Mourinho. Mm-hmm. Let's see if his ways, you know, might not suit you, but just do it nonetheless, try impress him.
Yeah.
That might free you to actually express yourself.
If your team is defending all the time, even against Brighton, that game that they lost, they were set up so defensively. I'm wondering, okay, you've got so much quality in this team to actually play on the front foot. But, you know, if you don't do that, and it's impossible to get the best out of the players.
So it's very simple. It's very simple. And you speak of John Terry and Luke Shaw. For me, a superstar like Paul Pogba, and I say superstar based on every aspect you can, the term superstar on. Paul Pogba is multi-talented. He ticks all the boxes. So you can't expect your star player, and let's be honest, he's a star player for United. You can't say to your star player, do a job for me. No.
Mourinho turned Jonobi Mikel, who was voted the second best creative player in the world after Messi in 2005. Turned him into a defender.
And the thing is, you can't say to the only player you have in your team, besides David De Gea, who can easily be called world class. You can't say to him, you do a job for me. No,
but
he should be the guy that you're basing your whole game on.
But Lozzi, here's the thing, though, right? And this is something I said about Troy Deeney last week. is...
Before you continue, okay. and this is the issue for me, you cannot in any sentence have Paul Pogba and Troy Deeney in the same sentence.
I'm about to. Deeney's strengths have
got nothing to do with his ability as a footballer.
Hang on,
they are what he adds more.
But Lwazi...
Pogba should be what he does as a footballer.
Lwazi...
Use those.
There is a certain attitude. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the ability aside now. Let's take the ability aside. Yeah. There's a certain attitude that is required to live and sustain yourself in the Premier League.
Yeah.
This was what Veron's problem was when he came at Manchester United with Sir Alex Ferguson, right? And I'm going to use Veron as an example. Came in, big money signing, one of the best midfielders in the world, playing for a top international team. There's a certain attitude that is required for you to sustain yourself in the Premier League.
Right.
All your ability can count for nothing. Can ask Cristiano Ronaldo about that. Your ability means nothing if there's a certain approach and attitude you don't bring. So, my point is with Paul Pogba is that the ability is there. There's no question, there's no denying that. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain attitude, a certain blue-collar ethic that you need in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And that's maybe what Jose is trying to say to Pogba. Listen, we know you're good. We know you've got skill. We know you like going forward. But maybe there's something on the other end that's outside of the spectrum of ability that I need you to put in this specific role that will open you up.
Okay, okay.
To being the Paul Pogba of Juventus and France.
I absolutely agree with you there. But then, can we not then direct whatever criticism of Pogba? Can we not then direct it in that regard to say that you don't have a don't? Because the thing is, the people that are criticizing Paul Pogba are criticizing his ability, and that's the issue. They're criticizing his ability.
If you are going to criticize
his blue collar or lack of. Don't criticize his ability. He's United's. He's one of two world class players at United.
I'll give you an example. It's almost the same situation that we have at my club at Arsenal with Mesut Ozil. Mm. The ability is not in question.
Yeah.
Right. It's not in question. It's just the approach and the work ethic and a certain, you know, blue collar man that is required in the Premier League. So that's why there are certain players that you wouldn't. Gareth Barry, for example. Mm. Who would have thought Gareth Barry has played so many years in the Premier League, so many games and so many minutes under his belt? His ability is not up there amongst the best, you know, holding midfielders. Yeah. But there's a certain approach that he gets, that he understands what is needed to survive in this league. And maybe that is what Jose is trying to say to Pogba, is that, listen, your ability is not going to go away.
Get your Gareth Barry
exactly. on. You're not going to be a terrible player overnight.
Yeah.
However, there's just something that you might have to bring on the table that I need right now that, you know, maybe you don't like. Mm. But maybe ask Frank Lampard about that. Mm. You know, ask Samuel Eto'o about that. Ask Wesley Schneider about that. So if I'm Paul Pogba, seriously, if I'm Paul Pogba, and look, Manchester United are not going to sell Pogba now unless somebody triggers his release clause, right? Maybe it wouldn't hurt, you know, to say, you know what? Let me phone Wesley Schneider. Let me phone Frank Lampard.
Yeah.
Guys that were sort of in my position. Guys, here's where I am. Here's what's happening. You know the situation. Am I wrong or help me?
I don't agree with that.
Don't agree with that either.
Pogba has earned his right to be Paul Pogba.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And what United fans, those who are listening, need to understand that you are not in a position, based on what has happened to our team over the past couple of years, to demand certain aspects of this and that from one of your two only world-class players. You're not in that position. Pogba has earned the right to, if Barcelona are knocking on his door, he's earned the right to say, what do you have to say? He's earned that. You can't expect or demand the same loyalty to Manchester United from Pogba as you would from Luke Shaw. Firstly, because let's not forget what we did to Pogba as a younger player.
You let him go as if he didn't mean nothing.
Exactly. So it was his decision to come back. Yes, the money was good, but he's still very much in a position where he can decide to go anywhere,
Amika,
because he's only one of two players in the team.
I'm an Arsenal fan. Can this chaos go on at United? I'm loving this.
This is a problem.
Can this chaos continue?
This
I'm loving
is the
this.
Problem.
Let's move on. We've been getting this from them. I am loving it. We're seeing planes fly over with this guy.
I'm
the specialist in failure.
I'm saying
I'm loving it.
I'm saying
That's all I'm saying.
The limited number of world-class players you do have, you need to take care of. Otherwise, he will, and he's good enough to leave and go to literally any other big team in the world.
And he'll do well. He'll do well. If he goes to Barcelona, he'll do well.
See what I mean? So now you're going to, and then we're going to be left with Fellaini and Lingard running the show. But we're going to move on from Paul Pogba and whatever issues that United and United fans still have with him. And I mean, there's still also the rumor mill is very much continuing as far as the Zinedine Zidane coming in and sort of rescuing matters if they need rescuing at United. There's also a bit of a Paulo Dybala story that is sort of emanating
There's not a transfer window for players until January.
Yeah.
And even if I doubt Juventus will sell Dybala, because Dybala is like the perfect foil for Ronaldo.
Yeah.
With regards to Zidane, maybe. I mean, some of these things, yeah, there's no smoke without fire. But Man United won their game last game they played. So let's keep that rumor in the cupboard for a while and see what happens.
Let's see what happens when they travel to the big playing Watford, who have made a fantastic start to the season. Let's move on, though, to what we did see as far as international breaks is concerned and some of the injuries that I've already touched on Luke Shaw. The good news for any of you United fans is that he seems to be all right. It wasn't anything muscular or anything like that, just perhaps a concussion, a heavy one. And give him a week or two, he should be back and filling that left-back role. There was an injury, Ola, to Torreira as well. You haven't used him enough, but he's still an Arsenal player. And your thoughts on that?
Well, I saw some updates on his injury. It looks like it's a calf strain.
Yeah.
So at max, maybe a game, a week and a bit, you know. So it won't be too much of a problem. Plus, we've got the Europa League coming up soon. So he'll be rested for that game. So I don't think it's any cause of concern.
Yeah.
I know he was being treated immediately after the game, and they haven't, you know, suspected anything worse than a calf strain of a maximum 2 weeks. So he should be fine.
Oh, yeah. All right. And with that, we got to have a look now at a lot of the domestic leagues are returning, obviously, this coming weekend after the international break. And I guess it's only fitting that we do start in England, where we've got a big game coming up for you, Imika, and your Reds. You've got Spurs up next.
Well, I mean, that's the game everyone looks forward to. Last season, it was the one game that really put a dampener on Liverpool's early brilliant start. You know, they had lost 5-0 to... 5-0 to Man City. And then they also lost to Tottenham. But after that loss to Tottenham, you know, was when the team picked up. So going back to Wembley, I think that this game will be a game that will be of interest to everyone who loves the game. Spurs, on the other hand, riding very high and being brought down to earth by Watford, so they know that they can afford two losses in a row. So it'll be a game to look forward to. And I don't want to call it, but I want to say that I still feel that Liverpool has enough in their locker to get another win in this game.
Are we going to see the type of game that we right now are thinking about? Is it going to be that open? Is it going to be another 5-2 or 5-3 type of game?
I think it's going to be an open game because, you know, this is the first sort of big game for, first big game for both teams because at Old Trafford,
shut up,
was nothing for Tottenham. So it's going to be one of those games where I think both managers enjoy their positions right now in terms of their respective careers, because they're both at that level where, you know, the Mourinho's, I think the world is down with Mourinho's, the world is down with Ancelotti, Wenger's out of the picture. Yeah. And I think they are at that level whereby it's them going into the future as to who could be in the Premier League that next super manager in terms of, you know, the Ferguson caliber type of manager. And for them, you know, they have a lot to lose in terms of the league in this game. And I'll tell you why. Because should Tottenham lose this game, one, that's back-to-back losses, they haven't signed anybody.
Mm.
So going into the January transfer window, it's going to be thin.
Yeah.
New stadium, nothing. They cannot improve. They will have gone to, two losses now in the start of the season?
Remember what I said
Remember last year, Tottenham went, I think, they went nearly 15 games having only lost one game, right?
But I told
and that's
you,
what
I
got
told
them
you,
up there.
I told
so
you,
to me,
you,
I see
I told
this.
You, it's 2 weeks ago, I said Tottenham will be the one team that will buy players in the
and I don't think so, right? Now for Liverpool, right, why it's a big game for me is that if they lose this game now, right, it's going to be a snowball effect in terms of how other teams are going to see them versus the bigger teams, because we've seen them
against, they won't lose.
We've seen them against the smaller teams, right? They were walking their way through these games. Now against a much tougher opponent, teams have got time to study them. Teams have got time to figure them out.
Better resources.
So we're going to see the real Liverpool, and we're going to see the real Tottenham against Watford. I'm not sure that was the real Tottenham, but it's a big game for both teams. Mm.
Tottenham beat Man United, and you're saying that wasn't the real Tottenham.
And then a week after, they got turned over by Watford. So I'm still not sure which is the real Tottenham and which is the real Liverpool.
Liverpool will win this game.
Oh. Are you saying this as a Liverpool fan?
No.
Okay, so then
I'm saying it because I'm saying it because of how the team has been set up. They've gone through these games without going past to gear two. Mm. If they were driving a car, they haven't really put in so much.
And you think it's going to be the same way against Tottenham?
Liverpool does better when they play against teams that come out to play against them.
Yeah.
And this is just a perfect game for them.
But Amika, the difference is, right, against teams that you've played this season, okay? You played Leicester with no Vardy, right? So you didn't have to face that sort of top striker. And, you know, when you played Crystal Palace, Zaha wasn't there, right?
He was there.
He was there, but, you know, he wasn't at his best.
He was there. Stop making excuses.
Crystal Palace were playing well.
Yeah.
So now you're actually going to play a team where everybody is fit. The strong starting lineup is there, and they've got Harry Kane firing with the momentum from the World Cup. He scored in August, so he's confident now. So for me, I want to see how Liverpool handle that, because this, so far this season, as I've described,
Spurs should be worried. They should be worried about Salah, Mane, Keita, and Firmino. Firmino scored for Brazil, by the way.
Yeah, scored open goal.
And Salah scored two goals, missed two penalties. Mm.
Okay, well, I mean, what, missed two penalties?
Well, the second one, he scored
the rebound.
Okay, so this will be a very nice sort of
I'm looking forward to
next week. We'll see how it goes, as you put it, Dimika. We'll see how it goes, and we'll have a discussion in seeing which of the two sides did manage to get a win. As far as La Liga is concerned, Atletico dropped points last time out, and for me, they look like a side that is struggling to come to terms with, you know, being not only being third favorite for the title, but being actually one of the you know, perhaps same level as Barcelona and Real Madrid for the title this season.
Well, Atletico, for me, I feel will even be the team to challenge for the title more because they have a lot more settled team. And it's okay to drop a point. It's still early days, but I feel that if ever there's a chance for Atletico to have a go at the title, this season is a season for them.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the Balaidos is not the worst place to drop points. There's been a lot of big sides that have gone to Celta and struggled. But I mean, if you look at what they have done and they've brought in Lamar and he seems to have settled in really quickly. They still have plenty of quality as well.
Gelson Martins.
They still got plenty of quality. Do you expect them to
be honest, they've surprised me this season because I thought they would have been up there, you know, with 100% record. I know playing at Celta Vigo is never easy, but, you know, they have enough players to see it through or at least hang on for a point.
Yeah.
And even in the, you know, the victories that they've claimed this season, they haven't actually looked their best.
At all.
And I'm worried for them in terms of the investment they've made this season because they seem like they've gone gung-ho, not only just in the league this season, but in the Champions League. And I'm still not seeing, you know, early days, but I'm still not seeing that Atletico that, you know, just gets the job done in some way or another.
Is it a different challenge, though, for someone like Simeone to say to him, we're giving you attacking quality now, we're giving you offensive quality, drop the whole, you know, victim act, or the whole, we're going to sit back and because we don't have enough resources, we're going to sit back and be everyone's second team because, you know, we're the underdog the whole time. Is it a different challenge for him? Does he have it in his locker to be a favorite?
I think that's a very good question because, you know, we've seen it with teams where and when an underdog all of a sudden becomes a favorite, you know,
it's a very different
mentality. I mean, you saw them this at the start of the season in the UEFA Super Cup. they came in as slight underdogs. I know Ronaldo wasn't in the picture. Yeah. But they played really well. They played like that dogged Atletico who are the underdogs that have got nothing to lose. And the result came their way. This season, it's a different approach, different title. They're coming in as title contenders. Yeah. And I'm not so sure that goes well to certain players who have a point to prove. I mean, I look at people like Diego Costa, for example. He thrives in situations whereby he's an underdog or you're not expecting much from him. And that's where he's going to give you the performances. Whereas this season, he's expected at least to get in the 20-plus goals. He's expected to be one of their star players. And he's also had a bit of a slow start. Mm. And I'm not so sure that works well for a team like Atletico when you've gone from this underdog all of a sudden to being favorites, which is the same thing that's going to happen now with Mika's team in England. You know, underdogs now this season, they're favorites. So we're going to see how that plays out for teams like Liverpool and Atletico.
We take it 1 week at a time, and so far it's working out. So,
Mika always has an answer when it comes to Liverpool. He really does. Let's bring it a bit closer to home now, and this is a question I want to pose to you guys. Which of these four teams in the Absa Premiership needs to win the most? And I look at Kaizer Chiefs coming up against Cape Town City, and I look at Orlando Pirates up against SuperSport United. Of those two clashes in those four teams, which two are in a bit of a we're okay at the moment, and which two do you feel are like
let me put it to you this way, right? There's a team here that hasn't won a game.
Yeah.
And to me, Kaizer Chiefs are in serious trouble.
Yeah.
They need a win.
Yeah.
Because you know how Chiefs fans are. The moment things don't go their way, there's a riot, there's problems. People ask for coaches to be subbed, fired, and people just run on the pitch. So Chiefs really need a win. They've got to win. They've got to.
But the problem
is that they're playing an informed Cape Town City who themselves also need a win just as badly as the Chiefs. So they are very confident coming into this game, Cape Town City. So I wouldn't be surprised if it is a draw, but Chiefs need the win more, you know, than Cape Town City. As far as Pirates are concerned, you know, I think the Kabuza situation, obviously that's done and dusted, but SuperSport has just been one of those teams that just really stick it to them over the years.
Them,
and
I think they need that win more
for their morale against SuperSport than anything.
I think it's a very funny situation. I want to agree with him about Kaizer Chiefs needing a win. I think that Orlando Pirates and SuperSport United have become like their own kryptonite.
Yeah.
It's like every time they come up against SuperSport United, they struggle. Even when they seem like they're winning, then they panic and, you know, SuperSport comes back into that game. But overall, even if Pirates lose, it won't be as bad as if Kaizer Chiefs lose their game, because Chiefs really, really need a win. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, anything less than a win will put a lot of pressure on the coach, and probably even put more pressure on the management to either get a new coach or do something drastic. And what else can they do? They cannot sign new players until January. And so they might have to decide whether they want to swim or sink with Solinas.
If you were to give us a bit of a prediction as far as those two games are concerned, Chiefs, Cape Town City, SuperSport United, Pirates?
Another draw.
Oh, well, the Chiefs game.
For Chiefs. And SuperSport United and Pirates also a draw.
Another draw as well.
Yeah. Both draws. Hmm.
Well, I mean, they did meet just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
In the cup, was it quarterfinals or semifinals?
Was it the quarterfinals? Yes.
And there was a draw there that SuperSport United ended up winning on penalties. But Imika's going with two draws. Ola, are you going with?
You know what? I think Cape Town City are going to upset Chiefs. Right.
Will it be an upset, really, these days?
Well, you know, it won't be much of an upset. They're away from home, but I think Cape Town City are going to win there.
They've been doing well away from home.
They've been doing well, right, away from home. And I think Pirates this time, come on, they've got to do it, surely. They've got to do it.
With their finishing coach.
Yes, I think they're going to beat SuperSport. Mm. I think it could be a comfortable game for Pirates, you know.
Why do you say that?
Against SuperSport United.
Against SuperSport, because I think, you know, the momentum coming into this game, Pirates, you know, they finally seem like they've got the right starting lineup.
Mm.
Okay, we've got a few players in the national setup now, and I think SuperSport this season they kind of overestimated themselves. I know they're on form in the cup and all, and Gaetan has done well with
they've won five games now,
yes,
on the trot,
but right, I think
second on the table
at some point, you know, Pirates you know, their class as one of the big teams in South Africa is going to have to come through against a big team.
Yeah.
You saw them last year against Sundowns when they needed to win that game to push them further into the league, and they thrashed Sundowns. And I see them not in a similar position against SuperSport, but they're in a position whereby they actually need a win, and it's a big team. And Pirates do this against big teams when they will surprise you and thrash them. Mm. And I wouldn't be surprised if Pirates win this game 3-0. Please quote me on that. Pirates are going to beat SuperSport 3-0.
You don't make such statements and not expect us to quote you.
I'll be watching the game with so much interest. I'm thinking about your face
Before we do close, I think it would be terrible for us to not speak about Wits and the fantastic start they've made to the season. Not only are they picking up points, they're scoring goals as well. I mean, I think I can think of two games already they scored three goals in. They scored two goals in a lot of the other games as well. They're
They've just had one defeat against SuperSport. I think that normally with Wits, even the season where they won, and a couple more seasons, we've seen them finishing strong, not starting as well as they've done. So let's see how they can keep up that momentum. But it's a great start and a surprise, if you ask me.
Mm. Okay.
I think also credit to the Wits management for keeping faith in Gavin Hunt. Because, you know, last season, things could have really gone pear-shaped for Wits. And
that's
usually PSL teams panic in that situation. And they think, oh, no, we're going to get relegated, get rid of the guy, fire the guy. Mm. And they've kept faith in him. They've given him a good squad again this season. And, you know, Gavin, you know, his record speaks for himself. So he knows what to do in this situation. And I'm not surprised they're back in it in the, excuse the pun, in the hunt for the, you know, early in the season for the title. And I think they're actually one of those teams that are going to surprise again this year. And I see them finishing in the top five.
Okay. Top five, Paula says, for Wits. They'll be thinking, we'll be finishing in the top one. Fantastic start they've made to the season.
We'll see
how it all unfolds. I mean, some really good, you know, local games coming up this weekend. Some fantastic games coming up in Europe as well. There's still Serie A, Juve up against Sassuolo, which, believe it or not, is a top two clash 3 weeks into Serie A. Inter up against Parma. Inter just coming from their first win of the season. So a lot to play for in Serie A as well. A lot to play for in La Liga and, of course, in the Absa Premiership. But from us here at Pitch Invasion, for one last time, my name is Loazi Sikubu.
3-0 Kola Makwaza to Pirates.
And of course, we're painting White Hart Lane red. It's going to be called the Red Hart Lane. Liverpool to win. Emeka Anyadike signing off.
Goodbye for now.